and welcome to another episode of the Hinkle is Home podcast, your audio home for all things Butler Bulldogs basketball. My name is Lucas Harkins, here with my co-host Josh Mullenix. How much sleep did you get last night, Josh?
Dude, a lot. Ooh, my whoop recovery score, my whoop recovery score is like 96%. I am absolutely buzzing. There was some pizzazz in that intro there. So even if you didn't get a ton of sleep, it's not showing up in the performance here. I'm sure that has something to do, but with what we saw inside the CHI Health Center, Omaha. The Omaha's at the end, by the way. CHI Health Center, Omaha. Omaha. I've got a comically large cup of coffee that I'm most of the way through, which is going to carry me through this here podcast. But I'm good. It's a Saturday morning. Time to talk a little Butler hoops before Lucas is showing me his also massive beverage that he has next to him. It's a big college basketball day in general. We're going to start it off with talking some Butler hoops after Friday's win.
Yeah, I'm not a coffee person, so I'm a daily wild strawberry Crystal Light with caffeine. It rocks.
Crystal Light does with caffeine?
Yeah, there's a few of them. The strawberry one's sick. The only one I like have with any sort of consistency, but yeah.
Wait, that's sick. I had no idea. I'm a long time Crystal Light peach tea guy. So
Nice. There's about 100 of those in my house, thanks to my wife.
Beautiful. That's fantastic. It's not something I do regularly nowadays, but it's definitely been one in the past. So I'm familiar. I did not know that they were looking out for you, non-coffee lovers who need your caffeine.
For sure. And we definitely need it because, you know, I was up till probably 2 or 3 last night. I was buzzing. So let's talk about it. And because anyone listening to this pod knows what it is, and that's Butler's one-point road win at Creighton. In what, quite frankly, if I take a step back from being a Butler fan and a Butler writer and Butler media, one of the most entertaining college basketball games of the year.
Totally. I saw so many tweets of, this is seriously the most fun I've had watching a college basketball game all year. People who have absolutely no connection to either program other than they cover college hoops, watch college hoops closely. Throttled a little bit by the 22-minute final 60 seconds, but that's okay. Oh, boy. But yeah. The second half was truly like the shot making coupled with the lack of defense by either squad made it a very entertaining watch. And so by the time we got to the end of the game, it felt like a lot of at least the Twitter college basketball world, it felt like a lot of college basketball Twitter was honed in on Butler versus Creighton, which was fun. It gave the game, I thought, at least from my perspective, even more buzz as we were coming down the final stretch.
Yeah, I completely agree. I'm not sure what the overall value is to it. I it's certainly not none, but this game being really the only game worth watching on a Friday night instead of being like a 2 o'clock tip on a Saturday, like it deserves to be like prime time basketball. Like it was a blast from start to finish. Like it was just so much fun. Like, and obviously some of that comes back to some defensive woes on both sides. But I mean, I said this, obviously Butler winning at Creighton is already a difference from the last few years. Like I'm not saying that that's not different, but even if Butler were to have lost this game, man, it's just so much fun to score.
Like, it's so much fun.
Fun to watch. Like
at the 9 minute mark last night, and I tweeted this at the 9 minute mark last night, Butler had already scored more points at Creighton than they had ever scored in a game against at Creighton in Big East. So that's 10 years. And it was with 9 minutes left of the game, they had scored 75. The most was 74. And you know, the results haven't been kind to Butler in Omaha, but just the performances, it's not like they've It's not like they've lost a bunch of close games. They just kind of gotten smoked, or they've lost, like, they, at one point they lost 54-52 in Omaha. The one that they did win was a 58-56 game. So fun games that Butler is competitive in Omaha is not something we've gotten basically at all in Butler's run in the Big East. So really, really fun change of pace. And, you know, the game starting at 9, everybody, you know, even the people who decided that they weren't going to watch college basketball last night and they were going to go do something on Friday night, a lot of people are back. So I think that was part of it as well, that this game didn't start until 9 on the East Coast. So you come back and you're just kind of winding down, and there's a really good Butler-Creighton game to kind of watch the end of, I think also helped.
Yeah. It was a great basketball game. Like, it really was. And I think before we get into the game in specific, I'm going to ask you a simple question.
Hit me.
Because I don't think you were Friday at 5 o'clock, but now Saturday at 10 a.m. Are you all in on Butler postseason hopes? Like, let's go get it.
Yes. They are so – and we've talked about this a little bit, but it's even more true than it was when we talked about it a week ago. Butler is so much in its own category with other bubble teams, like so much in its own category. There are so few teams that are going to have 4 quad one wins at all. Butler's 4-6 in quad one now. Mm-hmm. And they've got 6 more quad one opportunities in this month. And half of them are at home. So, I mean, where we're standing right now, I'd be surprised if Butler doesn't add a 5th quad one win at some point this month, if not a 6th quad one win. So, I mean, if we get to that point, it'll start to be more about, the conversation will probably shift to more about what seed is Butler going to get rather than is Butler going to make it into the tournament. But it would be irresponsible to not be all in. They're over 500 in Big East play at this point in the season for the first time since the 2019-20 season. And it's, you know, the resume is absolutely there. And apart from a DePaul game, and you could talk to me about, it'd be nice to beat St. John's at home and beat Xavier at home in terms of getting into the tournament, securing that kind of at the end of the season. But it's we're getting to the point where it's going to be hard to play yourself out of the conversation as long as you don't do anything super stupid the last, you know, 4 weeks of the season.
Yeah, I mean, we talked not just on the most recent pod, we talked about it in December, that Butler had put itself in a spot where it needed to go 10-10 in conference play.
Mm-hmm.
And that seemed like a tough challenge. Well, now they're 6-5. And winning at Creighton makes the path to 10-10, so just obviously so much easier. Mm-hmm. And I think the other thing with that is it makes the path to 11-9 easier. And I think that's 10-10 is still a pretty significant bubble team. I think 11-9 puts you in a different spot. Not only does 11-9 put you in a different spot from the perspective of where Butler would stand at the end of the regular season. Mm-hmm. And of course, all bubble conversations rest on how other teams perform as well. But 11-9 would put Butler in a pretty good spot. It would also likely mean a top 5 finish in the Big East, because they'll have, with tiebreakers being their record against the top 2 teams in the league, no one's really beating UConn. But Marquette's a good bet to finish second. And if they don't, Creighton's probably up there too, in which Butler's 1-1 against both. Mm-hmm. And if Butler gets a top 5 seed, they avoid playing DePaul in like the first round in what could be a disaster kind of game. Like, we've seen that happen. We've seen a Xavier team, I think it was COVID year, so it didn't actually – we didn't see the results of whether Xavier would have been selected or not that year. But they were a fringe bubble team that got a DePaul loss in the opening round of the Big East tournament and probably would have missed the field.
Yeah.
Like, there's something to be said for not having – those opportunities. And you already mentioned it, like, outside of an at DePaul game later in the year, Butler doesn't have any more quad 3 or 4 games unless you play them in the Big East tournament, and finishing top 5 would avoid such a potential landmine. Yeah. The big thing, it was just, it, winning at Creighton was such a massive result. Like, it's, you mentioned it getting up to four wins in quad one. There are a few bubble teams at 3 and 4. There's Northwestern, Nebraska is at 3. Boise State has 4. Texas A&M has 4. But it's two road wins at top 20 teams in the country. That's so valuable. Yeah. At Creighton, at Marquette. Like, that's a feather in your cap that other teams just simply don't have. Right. And won't have, because it's really hard to win on the road. It just is. So Butler made a jump up to 35th in strength of record after last night. And that's really, really significant, because strength of record, to me, it is quite frankly the most valuable statistic, most valuable ranking on the team sheet. Whether or not the committee agrees with me on that is a different story. But my belief is that strength of record is the most important ranking when it comes to selection. And it's important to keep in mind that the committee selects its 68 teams before it seeds them. And in that case, having a strength of record at 35 and a KPI that jumped, I believe, 14 spots up to 53, that's the other resume metric, is pretty solid.
Yeah.
Sorry, yeah. I went full bracketology hat there.
That's fine. You're allowed to go as deep into bracketology as you'd like. You just aren't allowed to expect me to respond with the same level of analysis that someone else might. So yeah, it's I'm gonna tap into the emotional side. It's been a long time since February 3rd. We were talking about what Butler needs to do to get back to the tournament, and it really being like a feasible thing for it to happen, and to actually have some belief that they can put together whatever they need to put together in the last 4 weeks of the season to make it happen. That's super fun, and makes the next 4 weeks. It makes, you know, everything before Selection Sunday, and it even makes the rest of February.
It makes my day today.
And it might make it tomorrow too.
It especially makes it today, because like, There are so many, as not just a Butler writer, but as someone who covers the country, for Heat Check College Basketball, make sure to check it out.
Sure.
But Saturdays are so full of hoops, and to enter a Saturday fresh off a road win over Creighton on a Friday night, where now I don't have to worry about Butler basketball over a Saturday where I can just settle in and watch college hoops, is going to be fantastic. It's a great.
You're not wrong. It's a great point.
Now, as we get into this game, like getting into not just the emotional aspects of it and the implications for the postseason that come from it, the first thing I want to say about it is this was a good win. And I don't mean that like in the obvious sense of like you won at Creighton, that's a good win. But Butler went on the road and beat a good basketball team. Well, that team played pretty well. Like, Creighton didn't play poorly, I would say, against Butler. Their offense was there. They didn't shoot nearly as well from three as Butler did, but like, they attacked the basket. They shot, 55% from the field. They got to the free throw line well, which is something they don't normally do. Creighton played well, and Butler still managed to win on a road in a sold-out Friday night arena. Like, that's significant.
Absolutely. I mean, everything that Creighton did offensively, Butler did even better. I mean, 38 of 69 from the field, 13 of 22 from the three-point line is crazy. It was easily the most productive bench performance of the year. I mean, Finley, 4 of 6, he made all three of his threes on the road at Creighton. That was not what I would have circled as Finley Bisjack's, here's my efficient, look at what I can do as a shooter game in the Big East. That would not have been the one that I would have circled, but that's where we got it. Bowden Kapke has the biggest onions on the entire team, period, end of discussion. He had 8 points, 3 rebounds, and just came in and looked like DJ Davis from the stripe when DJ Davis had lost 50% of his vision. It was, if you told me, you know, on one hand, Creighton's big four, they had to score all but 4 points of the team's points in this game. They scored 94 of Creighton's 98 points, and three of the four guys played all 40 minutes. But, I mean, they did it efficiently. Like, you know, Steven Ashworth had 26 on 15 shots. Shireman had 26 and 11 on 17 shots. Trey Alexander was 50% from the field. Ryan Kalkbrenner was 75% from the field and went to the stripe 8 times, had 9 rebounds and 20 points. If you told me all of those things, I would put a decent amount of money on Butler losing that game at CHI Health Center Omaha. And they didn't. And that's, you know, it's credit to the offensive performance. So the 3-point shooting and just never letting up on the gas pedal, because if Butler had let up on the gas pedal offensively, they wouldn't have been able to hang with Creighton, because Creighton wasn't missing either. So there's something to be said for, even if you aren't playing defense super well, being able to go just shot for shot, toe to toe, over and over and over again for an entire game with a Creighton team that, you know, was buzzing offensively, and Butler being able to hang with them was super impressive.
If I told you 24 hours ago Creighton scores 98,
20-point loss at least.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Against the best defense in the Big East.
Yes.
Yeah, I'd agree. Now, what if I told you that
I thought the path to winning this game was the opposite.
I did. I thought it was offense. I thought offense was the path.
Okay.
I was surprised I thought that, but I did think it was the path. I thought I was going to say, if I knew that
Posh was hurt, if I knew that Posh wasn't going to play in this game, then my answer is probably a little bit different. Because we've talked about this idea of super leaning into offense, which is what Butler was going to have to do. And it was pretty obvious from the jump that there wasn't going to be a ton of defense played. But I would have given Butler a better chance to win a 60-59 game than a game where the only piece of information you gave me was that Creighton scored 98.
Yeah, sure. Now, obviously, like, I watched the whole game very intently, but it still surprised me when I looked back at the box score afterward and the stat stuff that followed. Butler didn't trail for the entire last 11:57.
Did not trail.
They tied a few times, but they led or tied the entire last 11:57.
Mm.
That's really impressive.
Yeah. Like, especially without the guy that, with the, you know, one of the things we've said about Posh is the only guy that's been there before. In a close road Big East game. And now, granted, all of them have, but it's also different not having, mm-hmm. It's different when the ball has to be in some other guy's hands and Posh isn't on the floor. So this is one of the things I was going to bring up, that I don't want it to get lost that Butler was also, missing a very impactful player in Posh. Now, granted, is it fair to say that it unlocks some things offensively, especially when Finley is going to shoot the way that he does? You know, is there some other things that you can do offensively without Posh on the floor? Sure. But I didn't want that to get lost in translation here, that there was no Posh in this game. And now they tried to give it away. We need to talk about fouling up three, because people seem to think that fouling up three is like, if you foul up three, you're guaranteed to win. We learned last night that you are absolutely not guaranteed to win if you foul up three. But it was impressive that they were able to keep Creighton at bay, and there wasn't like a stumble that really put them behind the eight ball at any point.
Yeah, so I was going to bring this up later in the pod, but it just kind of makes sense as a transition now, and that's playing without Posh Alexander. Obviously, Posh does so many things well for Butler and is an impactful player, and obviously the starting point guard who does a lot of things for Butler. And Greg McDermott said as much following the game in the presser that, like, Posh obviously is very impactful for Butler. Obviously, Coach McDermott has coached against Posh on several occasions. Mm-hmm. But he mentioned after the game that Posh being out changes the entire defensive game plan for facing Butler. Because yeah. Posh is generally a non-shooter, and McDermott said as much. Whereas lineups with Finley, Bizjack, when he's hitting shots like he did last night, or lineups with Landon Moore, who hit a shot in the first 5 or 6 minutes from
deep. Yeah, it was early.
It changes the way Butler's defended. So how much of an impact? I'm not saying that Butler's a better team without Posh Alexander. Don't get me wrong. I'm certainly not saying that. But how much of a difference do you think it is for a Creighton team that was game planning defensively to face Posh Alexander?
It all of a sudden, like, it changes. Like, you go from there being 4 3-point shooters on the floor, guys, 4 guys capable of knocking down a 3-point shot. 3?
Right?
Jaylen I mean,
Thomas isn't really knocking it down either.
Yeah, but you're telling me that you're not going to respect Landon Moore, Jamil Telford, DJ Davis, Pierre Brooks, and or Finley Bizjack all on the floor at the same time?
I thought you said you were going from 3. Like the prior yeah. lineup having Posh and
Jaylen. Yeah, going from 3 to 4. Yeah, going from 3 to 4. Sorry if that wasn't clear. Yes, going from 3 to 4. Jaylen being the other guy in the starting lineup along with Posh. That is not a 3-point shooter, yes. And that fundamentally changes the way that that you have to guard a team, and also
and in some lineups 5. If Bowden's going to step out and play 13 minutes and hit 2 threes, you go 5 shooters.
Sure. I will say, if Butler shooting 13 of 22 from the 3-point line without Posh Alexander is better than a lineup that has Posh Alexander in it. Like there's also a version of this game where Butler can't shoot, can't make anything from the 3-point line. And it's very obvious that there's not that the pressure that Posh as a driving kicker puts on a defense, it's very obvious that it's not there. So yes, I mean, I'm not saying that in general Butler is better without Posh, but on this particular night when you're making 13 of 22 3-pointers, yes, Butler is better without Posh. So it was a little bit of a perfect storm, because not only do you stretch out the defense, which then allows, you know, even more room for a guy like Jamil Telfort to operate in the mid-range, you also have guys just knocking down shots all over the place. And when you get those two things at the same time, you score 99 points on the road.
So obviously in a game when you don't have Posh Alexander, it becomes exactly what it was. 49 minutes for Landon Moore and Finley Bizjack. And you needed them to play well, and they did. You mentioned Finley earlier, 11 points on 4 for 6, 3 for 3 from deep. His other make that wasn't a 3 was that nasty reverse just before the under 12 in the second half. He gave you 11. Landon Moore goes out and gets you 8, 2 for 6, 1 for 2 from 3. And really that early 3 I think is really important for just kind of setting a tone for what you're going to get in a game without Posh Alexander. Yep. And then he hit all 3 free throws when he was fouled on a 3 in the second half.
Yep.
And I think as much as we want to talk about the second half in this game, as that's obviously what leads to the victory, 4.1 seconds is what it took. A defensive rebound by Landon Moore, a push, instead of throwing a 50-footer from beyond half court, finds Finley Bizjack leaking out for a 30-footer at the buzzer to cut the deficit to 4 at halftime was as important of a play by both guys because it's a great shot by Finley, but it doesn't happen without a rebound and pretty good IQ to actually push the ball up ahead instead of just looking to take one from half court right away. I mean, that's a huge play and a huge swing.
Totally. Yeah. Really, really important. I mean, to make it way simpler than it should be, that's 3 points that you didn't get in the game that you won by 1 if you don't have that play.
Yeah. Now I think we've gone
And the optics of only being down four, like there's something so different. Four feels so different than down seven beyond it being three less points. Like it just feels way more in striking distance, I think.
Now we've gone a little too far into discussing this game without like really diving into the fact that Jamil Telfort was awesome.
Unbelievable.
Like he was tremendous. And honestly, the change in his game the last week or two has been outstanding. Like he has just fully gone away from trying to like force his way right to the rim. Mm-hmm. Like that was his issue early in conference play. He tried to get all the way downhill, and there's different levels of shot blockers in the Big East. Mm-hmm. And he had a very hard time with that. I mean, he had, obviously Creighton runs drop coverage. So he had a few opportunities to shoot a little floater from 8 or 9 feet that worked out great. But we saw flashes of it a couple weeks ago, and I'm pretty sure I mentioned it on the pod then. We saw a lot more than just flashes of the post fade last night, mm-hmm. like a lot of them.
Yeah,
he was 8 for 12 on further quote unquote twos yesterday.
What's further? Is it a feet? Is it just outside of the paint? Do you know how?
I think it's outside 4.5 feet. I mean, 26 points, 12 for 17 from the floor, hit 2 threes, 4 assists, no turnovers. He played 37 minutes, most on the team. Dude, he looked awesome.
Yeah, this was.
There were times I was screaming at the TV, like, just get the ball to Jamil. Well, let Jalen set some screens for DJ and then just work it.
Well, this is exactly what I was going to say. I very rarely the structure of this Butler team and what they do offensively and what's turned into like a really formidable three-headed monster in terms of offensive production that is Pierre, Jamil, and DJ. I typically don't have a reaction to execution late in a game that is simply why didn't somebody get a touch on that possession? And there was a possession late in the game on Friday that Jamil, like Butler needed a basket, and I don't think Creighton scored going back the other direction. So it didn't have like a massive impact, but it was two possessions in a row for Butler offensively. And the first one ended, I think maybe with a missed DJ Davis floater, maybe, or like mid range jumper. I'm not positive about that. I think that might be what ended the possession, but Jamil didn't touch it in the entire possession. And he had been automatic doing whatever he wanted for the entire second half. And then there was a big possession offensively that Ja didn't get a touch. And then the very next possession down, he got the ball and did this fadeaway jumper from further two. Shouts to Bark Torvik. and it went in. Like it was a very simple, like I don't know if Thad yelled at somebody or just IQ play, get the ball to Jamil. But that was one of the first times this season that I've had a very specific reaction of it is unacceptable that X player did not get a touch on offense on that particular possession at this point in the game. And that's where we were with Ja and what he was doing in the mid-range at that point. Last night, it was clinical and really opened up the rest of everything else because of what he was doing with the ball like right there in the middle of the floor.
Yeah, I mean, he was fantastic. And it really was the second consecutive game in this department because DJ kind of felt that way on the stretch against Villanova too.
Yeah. By the way, Ja is now 19 of 28 from two-point range the last three games. 19 of 28. And that comes right on the heels that he's hashtag back. That comes on the heels of a stretch where he was 6 of 26 from 2-point range in the three games prior against DePaul, Xavier, and Seton Hall. That's two losses and a win, three straight wins for Butler. And he's, 19 of 28 from 2-point range, and he's got 48, 65 points in those three games. So that's averaging just under 22 a game in the last three. That's That's good stuff. That's good stuff. And it's not an accident that Butler scored 99, 88, and 90 in those three games.
And I think that there was one of those Fox Sports Inside the Huddle discussions from Thad Mata that I think really stood out to me. And that was after the Baylor Shireman absolute poster, which was just nuts. Like that, because they talked about it being like Butler has to do a better job of, Thad said, like Butler has to do a better job of getting back on defense in those situations. Like Jameel takes a shot and then they run out. And what I thought was an important part of that discussion was none of it was Jameel took a bad shot because it is a tough shot he takes because he hit that shot down the stretch several times. It's not about the shot that forces the transition opportunity. It's about the shot followed by not getting back on defense that allows that opportunity. Because Jameel needed the ball every time he could in this game, and he was phenomenal with it. And it led to DJ Davis playing well. And those two guys, quite frankly, were as important as anyone going up against a Creighton drop coverage that's going to let Jameel get to his floater sometimes. And with how high Butler sets the screen for DJ Davis against drop coverage, it gives him the opportunity to pull up for three against the drop coverage, which he did and hit two of those and was followed on another.
Yeah.
And those two guys were as important to Butler's game plan as anyone, actually more than anyone. And they combined for 48 points on 20 of 29.
Sure. Is that any good?
Yeah, it's pretty
48
darn good.
On 48 on 29 shots. Is that any good?
It's pretty darn good. And now, the other freshman, we've talked about Finley Bisjack, but Bowden Kaffee, I mean, he deserves more claps than we gave already in this podcast.
Mm-hmm.
12 minutes, his most minutes played in a game against a D1 opponent since Michigan State on November 17th. Comes in, buries two threes, buries two clutch free throws in the final minute, picks up
like it was boards. Nothing, bro. Doesn't just touch the rim like it was nothing. there was no deep breaths. It was just like, oh yeah, these are two free throws in a game I've already played 28 minutes and we're up by 12 with 6 minutes left. Like that was, it's like he was unaware of the magnitude of the situation, just knocks him down.
Thad said on several occasions this year that Bowden Kaffee is a guy that stays ready.
Mm.
And we haven't really seen the total epitome of that until last night. Mm-hmm. We're like, he stays ready. Like, he hasn't played very much recently. He came in and early made an impact. He subbed in with 10:59 in the first half with 9:36 the other three. Minute and 23 seconds in, buried a three. And then he subbed in with 16:32 in the second half. 16:23, buried a three. Like, he hasn't taken long to make an impact when he's out there. And he deserves a lot of credit for how well he played last night. And then Gusto Casia, part of the rotation? First half minutes?
Possibly, sure.
Legit minutes in the second half. He played 8 minutes total. Like he played the fewest minutes of anyone on the team, but didn't see that coming.
Yeah, it's not like you know, there's on one side of the coin, it's, you know, he got 8 minutes. That's great to see. He had points, steals, assists, and rebounds in those 8 minutes.
And four,
but it's. Yes. I mean, sure, but I mean, we're gassing the bench up right now. What are you doing? What are you doing? Stop
it. Just being me.
Well, he's stuffing the stat sheet. I don't know what you want. He's stuffing the stat sheet. Sure. And sometimes you just gotta let him cook. And there's a little too much salt thrown in the pasta. It's okay. You just gotta let him cook.
Where are you going with this?
I was trying to cook. I was trying to cook too, and you're over here being a hater about Cassius fouls, bro. The point I was trying to make, thank you, Lucas, was that it wasn't like the rest of the bench was struggling and Thad just needed somebody to come in and make an impact off the bench. And So for him to come in and make an impact off the bench when there were other guys that Thad could have gone to is something I also think is notable. Now we've spent a minute on a very, very simple point because you wouldn't just let the fouls thing go. It's unbelievable. Shouts to Augusto Cassia. Shouts.
Yeah, for sure. He came up late. The whole bench came up big. And that, like, Butler won the bench battle in this game. Now Creighton doesn't go to his bench much, but neither has Butler generally. Butler won the bench battle 25-4 in points game where it's typical top reserve in terms of minutes played had to start.
Yeah.
They didn't more.
Yeah.
You got 2 out of Cassia, 11 from Finley, 4 from Dre, 8 from Bowden, and you did get 8 from Landon then in the starting lineup. That really was the game. It was how well, like, Jamil and DJ, you needed to play well, but even they at their best were not enough to win last night.
Yeah.
And they were at their best. Like, they were phenomenal. In addition to his 22 points, DJ Davis dished out 5 assists, one of which was disgusting. He's been playmaking at a much higher rate the last 2 games now, including the Villanova game. Like, those 2 guys were so good, and that wasn't going to be enough. Like, they had 48. 48 is a lot of points. Creighton scored 98. Like, you need to get 50 more elsewhere, which isn't often the case. But those guys all came to play, and there were, like, several moments that kind of even go, like, a little bit under the radar. Obviously, like even in the final half a second of the game.
Mm-hmm.
Creighton got the switch they wanted. They got Andre Screen off Ryan Kalkbrenner in 0.5 seconds.
Yeah.
That is as good of a Weapon X safety play of a switch by Landon Moore as there is. I mean, gets up. Like, the image of him leaping as 6'3 to knock away a lob to Ryan Kalkbrenner is phenomenal. And it's a really, really good play.
It's a good point.
Because you don't need to catch it. You don't need to catch it. He knows it. You don't need to catch it. It's 0.5. If you touch it and knock it away, it's over.
If you touch it, it's over. Like, as long as you don't touch it into the basket. If someone other than Ryan Kalkbrenner touches it, the game is over. Yeah, that's a really good point, because my initial reaction right after the play was, dude, Steven Ashworth was wide open. Or whoever. Like, there was somebody curling towards the ball from, like, basically the top of the 3-point line that was, like, wide open. And 0.5 seconds is enough time to get off a shot. It's not like the play had to be a tip. But who I can't remember off the top of my head who the inbounds guy was, but
Shireman threw the pass, I think.
It was Shireman. Okay.
It was Cassia guarding the inbound.
But I'm sure the communication is, if you see somebody other than Andre Screen on Ryan Kalkbrenner, that's where you go with the ball, and that's what he saw.
It's a good pass.
Oh yeah, no, absolutely. That's not It was the right play. I also think, like, but at the same time, it's still it's weird. It's the higher percentage play, but also the riskier pass. Right there, you know, Kalkbrenner's probably more likely to get to that ball than Steven Ashworth is to make a fadeaway 3 with 0.5 seconds on the clock. But I thought, I had a couple of different reactions to that play. But to your original point, Landon getting up there and just getting a finger on it, understanding what his job was as a defender there. It's not to contest. I mean, it's ultimately to contest a shot, but not in a get a hand in the face of a shooter kind of way. It's just whatever you need to do to disrupt Ryan Kalkbrenner just catching and finishing is what you need to do. And that's exactly what he did.
And you don't need to catch it. Like, you don't need to go for the you don't need to go for the interception in 0.5 seconds. Right. There's a reason guys don't do vertical tests jumping with both hands in the air.
Right.
He jumps with one hand. He jumps with one hand up.
Yeah.
And he gets the deflection out of it. And it really just was a great game from the bench as a whole. And I'm just including Landon in that group, even though he started that game. He's been a bench player for Butler all year. Yeah. Like, the bench really just came to play and had so many moments in this game. And that's, like, from start to finish. Landon hits an early three. Finley hits the three to end the first half and hits two others in the game. Bowden hits the two free throws late. Landon gets the deflection. There's so many positive things you can point to from that group. And I think that's especially important for even when Posh returns, is having this confidence of, well, we won at Creighton using these guys in Landon and Finley in particular, where you can have a little bit more flexibility and confidence in that group down the stretch of the season.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I don't have anything to add in on that subject. It is incredibly, whether you need it or not, we'll see.
Yes.
That doesn't mean that down the stretch of a big game, you now should go away from Posh Alexander. That's absolutely not the point.
Absolutely not.
That would be silly. But sure, knowing that those guys have that ability, have that confidence, and it's more about the confidence than the ability, there could be a moment at some point coming down the stretch that Butler is able to execute because of what they did in this game. Whether it's Posh is in foul trouble, Posh, you know, twists an ankle, God forbid, that Butler's able to close out a game that in theory, maybe they weren't otherwise able to close out if they don't have this win at Creighton without him.
Yeah, I completely agree. And now it marks a 4-game winning streak. I mean, obviously, three of those actually are against the bottom three teams in the Big East standings, because Villanova is currently ninth. But it's still 4 in a row in the Big East. That is way easier said than done, and it is not particularly easy said.
Yeah, I'm quickly trying to go through Butler's KenPom pages here to see when the last time that Butler won 4 straight games against Big East opponents, because it didn't happen in 2019-20. I'm looking right now. They won 3 games in a row a couple different times, but never won 4 in a row. I'm sure they would have if they got to play a Big East tournament game, because they won their last 3 games of the season that year. But and they didn't do it. They didn't do it in 2018-19. So we're all the way back to 2017-18. So the last time they did it, the last time they won 4 straight Big East games, was the 27-18 season, where they beat DePaul, St. John's, Marquette, and DePaul from January 20th to February 3rd. That's pretty impressive, because Butler just won 4 straight games from January 20th to February 2nd. So it's been exactly 6 years since Butler won 4 straight Big East games? 2018 to 2024?
Yeah,
it's been literally exactly 6 years. That's kind of wild.
One last thing I want to point out from this game in playing without Posh Alexander. Obviously, the last minute was not particularly pretty, but for 39 minutes of this game, Butler had 3 turnovers. One was a shot clock violation in the first half. Jameel Telfort with a face-up, and then kind of didn't notice the shot clock and airballed long from 15 feet near side. And another was an Augusto Cassia charge. That was 2 of the 3 turnovers for the first 39 minutes of basketball without your starting point guard.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, I know Creighton isn't a team that really pressures you into turnovers. That's not their identity defensively. But without your starting point guard, 5 turnovers total, that's pretty fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah, I was looking through the box scores again this morning, and that was one of the, like, neither team turned it over very many times at all, especially in the second half. But yeah, it's not the— you're right, Creighton doesn't do a ton of pressuring, but it's typically
14 turnovers.
it's typically not the, like, teams even with their you know, steady hands, their veteran guards, turn the ball over against pressure. It's the silly ones that that you have, that you're more susceptible to when you don't have your guy like Posh Alexander on the floor. So to not have any of those issues, granted, at the end of the game's maybe a little different, but then again, the plan, even if Posh Alexander is on the floor, is to get the ball to DJ Davis anyways. And that's where the two turnovers that Butler had, that's where they happened. Was trying to get DJ Davis the balls, more about where on the floor they were trying to get it to him, I thought was the issue, kind of twice in a row, like right there in the corner, that I thought was part of the issue. But then again, it's just, hey, if you get DJ the ball, the refs are probably going to call a foul because they're expecting to call a foul. So I'm not even sure that the turnovers they had at the very end would have not happened if Posh was on the floor, because the game plan would have been the same: get the ball to the second best free throw shooter in the entire country.
So before moving on, is there anything else you want to add from Butler at Creighton?
Yeah, the only thing I'll add is I don't want to see anybody ever tweet again about how simple fouling up three is. The act of fouling up three is simple. The what comes next of fouling up three is not. And we saw it last night. And it was a reminder of how much simpler the idea of, hey, if we just don't foul up three and we guard a 3-point shot that we know has to come, like, the chances of them making that shot are, like, not super duper high. Now, granted, Butler won this game. They didn't win the game against Providence that they didn't foul up three. So that's a data point that I cannot argue. But
correct.
What we saw in the 20 seconds after, once it was clear that Butler had committed to, hey, we're going to foul up three every time, we saw that it is that it forces more basketball and it forces you to execute for longer. So I still think this is not me moving away from how I feel about fouling up three. This is me just reminding people that what you are enabling when you foul up three is the opportunity to make more mistakes, and it puts a premium on execution because you have to get the ball in bounds. You have to make your free throws. And Butler did one of those things. It did not do two of those things. And it made it stressful. It didn't come back to bite them. And there's absolutely an argument that, hey, if Creighton makes a three, down three, and we go to overtime, that it's going to be hard to beat Creighton at Creighton in overtime when they're coming off the momentum of making a game tying three in regulation. All of these things I concede, but I think in the moment, especially when you don't foul up three, in the moment, there's this feeling of, what the hell is that amount of thinking? That's such a dumb thing. Like, why does anybody ever contemplate this whatsoever? And what we saw last night is why coaches contemplate the idea of fouling up three. You won the game. Ultimately, and for that reason only, it was the right call to foul up three. But Creighton had a chance to win the game in regulation with a 2-point field goal. Like, they needed a 2-point field goal twice to win in regulation. So it is not that simple. It didn't bite Butler, and not fouling up three bit Butler. So that's something I can't argue. But it clearly is not as simple as we like to make it on Twitter, watching from our television screens.
Yeah, I think not having Posh Alexander goes into that for me some. It factors into the calculus of the decision, because without Posh playing, Butler's number of good free throw shooters on the floor goes down. Like, he's shooting 78% at the line this season. And when he's not on the floor, you go to a lineup where Finley Bizjak, shooter by trade, 13 attempts all year, 69%. Pierre Brooks, 57 attempts, 70%, and 2 for 5, 2 for 6 in this game, having missed the front end just a few minutes earlier. Obviously, DJ Davis is a whole different deal. He's phenomenal, and Jameel Telfour has been phenomenal too. But that's two of your five guys on the floor. And I think that that factors into that sum to me, is not having another really knockdown shooter. And maybe Landon Moore is that. He did shoot extremely well last year at St. Francis, and he's almost never at the line this season. But after starting, three, four for his first nine on the year, that puts him at 12 for 13 cents. So maybe he is just a really good free throw shooter, and that helps. But I think missing Pasha Alexander does play a factor in that. I haven't really made up my mind on where I stand with following up three. I think that there are teams that it makes sense statistically and teams where it doesn't, and Butler's kind of in the middle there. Like, I think teams that shoot free throws really well and don't turn it over are in a good place to foul up three, and Butler is that team. But I also think teams that don't defensively rebound very well, I'd rather not foul three. And Butler doesn't rebound well.
And they didn't defensively rebound at the end of the game well. Like, that was it's not like they're not normally, and they did. Like, there were multiple offensive rebounds in that one possession that took forever and Creighton couldn't score.
So I'm with you. I think it's a harder discussion than people, the cut and dry that people think it is.
And then on the other hand, they didn't defensively rebound. They didn't get the ball in, and they still won the game, fouling up three.
Yes.
So maybe that's the argument. Yep. It's like, yeah, they didn't execute it well at all, and still won the game. So sure. maybe I'm just making it more than it needs to be. But I was stressed out watching the last 20 seconds.
Yes. I'm just glad that I have a dartboard that faces the opposite direction of my TV. So, like, as soon as I'm, like, going through any break, I'm just chucking darts.
Love it.
To help with the nerves there. But
yes. Well, you had a lot of time to throw darts. You had 22 minutes to throw darts. I'm glad you got your dart practice in last night.
Now, we're 52 minutes into recording this, and we've discussed one game. So I think there's a good chance we record after the UConn game and before Providence, just to kind of get another one out there, because we've gone rapid react here. So with that in mind, we'll just discuss UConn on the road right now. And obviously, UConn on the road Tuesday night, don't know the status of Pasha Alexander. DJ Davis, swollen eye, we'll see what his status is too. Yeah. But if I told you a week ago or 2 weeks ago, Butler's kind of playing with house money at UConn.
Totally.
Like, they are right now. Like, they deserve, like, and I know that most bracketologists still had Butler out of the field going into yesterday. I still think they were wrong, but I had Butler in the field of 68, of which I am one of the four voters for it. Butler was in the field there too. Obviously winning at Creighton changes that calculus, and they should be in most fields that you see updated over the next few days. Now you're playing with, like, at UConn, you're going to be 12, 13 point underdogs probably. It's not a game that
KenPom has it 12 right now, the projection.
Okay. It's a game that you shouldn't have your metrics plummet, because even if you're blown out, it shouldn't do too much. It's UConn's the number one team in the country on the road. But also, it's an opportunity to really make another statement without really need. Like, it's just – and Butler did play UConn close at home, obviously, without Donovan Clingan in that game, which makes a huge difference. But do you see – I mean, I came into this week, and I talked about it on last week's pod, that if you're going to take one of the at Creighton, at UConn games, it was going to be at Creighton.
100%.
And they got that. But what's your view on Butler at the number one ranked UConn Huskies?
This is for me about maintaining as much momentum as possible. Now, you could tell me that you don't care, that you could lose at UConn by 30 and not losing that much momentum. I wouldn't be thrilled, but if someone told me that they don't really care what the final score of this game is, that it, like, losing at UConn doesn't jeopardize a ton of momentum, I'd be willing to listen to that argument. But
sure.
But we talked about it, and we've talked about it, you know, in the context of a 2-0 week, you know, not being able to put the finishing touches on a 2-0 week, that you win at Marquette, but then you lose at home to Seton Hall, and you don't really put the exclamation point on a 2-0 week. This would be like being competitive. Like, you don't have to win this game. You certainly don't have to win this game to maintain momentum from winning on the road at Creighton. But it would be nice to not get just completely steamrolled when it comes to momentum, because we are still very much in this stretch of, there are two things that remain true. We are at the very beginning of a February stretch that is an absolute gauntlet. And it can be easy to forget that, because the kind of beginning of that gauntlet stretch was January 27th against Villanova, and Butler's 2-0 in those first two games of this gauntlet stretch. We are still very much at the beginning of this gauntlet stretch. And yep. To your point, and I think you did a good job grounding us kind of at the beginning of this podcast, which is like 10-10 is still probably Butler being a bubble team. It's not like we're playing with house money for the rest of the season.
Correct. Certainly not.
So maintaining as much momentum as possible through a game on the road at UConn, when you get to come home and play three straight games at home, is important, because Butler is not a lock to be an NCAA tournament team. Butler is not a lock to finish 500 or better in Big East play. Nope. Butler is not a lock, you know, for the rest of the season to go well. So there can't be this moment of, and Butler is still projected to lose five in their next six games per KenPom. That's still true. All of those things are still true. So
they're projected underdogs in those, but yeah.
Sorry. I'm just looking at the result projections. Five of the next six have an L next to Butler's name.
Three of them do have greater than 40% chances of victory, so odds are KenPom probably projects one of those to be a victory at least.
Totally. But there's still a ton of work to do. There are three games against teams that either you played really close on the road or you beat on the road in Providence, Marquette, and Creighton coming to Hinkle Fieldhouse. So it's important to not let your foot up off the gas. And even if you lose this game, like even by 15 in a game that you're down by like 8-10 most of the game, I think that's fine at UConn. And you can maintain a lot of what you've gotten over the last, you know, four games in this win streak. You can hold on to that coming back to Hinkle Fieldhouse. But if you let your foot up off the gas a little bit and you kind of coast through this UConn game, you could lose by 40 real quick. And that's not something I want to see.
Yeah, they did it to Xavier.
Yeah.
43. Absolutely. And so I just like, I think you're right on. I'd like to see continued momentum. It's not necessarily hoping for a win, although obviously we are. That would be astounding and fantastic and all of the above. But it's maintaining momentum heading into what will be a crucial three-game homestand.
Crucial.
And with that three-game homestand in mind, we are now just one game away from that three-game homestand at 500, at above 500 in conference play, 15-7, 6-5 in Big East play, one more road game at UConn on Tuesday night before not just Butler, but myself and several fans across the Indiana area will be making Hinkle home. And thanks as always for joining us for another episode. And I think we'll be back after the UConn game at some point this week before that three-game homestand. But until then, remember, Hinkle is home.